Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety. I'm so happy to be with you once again. Thank you for joining me. I have an interesting twist for today's show. Recently, I was interviewed by Sandra Riche, the clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression, the co-director of Empowered Women Workshops, co-director of Anxiety Videos, and founder of Sandra Riche's Couples Retreat, as well as the host of a top weekly radio show, Straight Talk, with Sandra Riche. She is also a best-selling author of the number one self-help book on relationships called Once Upon a Time, How Cinderella Grew Up and Became a Happy, Empowered Woman. And you might remember that I had her on the show a while back. Actually, she was a guest two times. I happen to really like and respect her very, very much. She is passionate and does some great work. So I thought I would share her interviewing me instead of my usual interviewing the guest. So that's coming up in a bit. Because she works with anxiety and depression, I want to stay on that topic to begin today's program because major depression is one of the most common mental disorders in the United States. And one of the most common ways people are treated for depression is through prescription medication. And often, these meds have serious side effects that can include black box warnings that warn against suicidal thoughts, as well as side effects such as weight gain, unusual personality changes, dry mouth, and other interesting side effects, not to mention the cost. A government study published in the Washington Post stated, antidepressants fail to cure the symptoms of major depression in half of all patients with the disease, even if they receive the best possible care. Now, I'm not suggesting that people ditch their medications, but it is possible to help decrease depression through other means, such as the documented use of essential oils, something you don't often hear about from doctors because there is no money to be made by using such a simple remedy, such that comes from a plant. So I want to share briefly with you how lavender oil benefits mood and has long been used to help battle depression. A study published by the International Journal of Psychiatry in Clinical Practice reported that lavender essential oil can help alleviate anxiety and depression. The study also showed that there were no adverse side effects from using lavender oil to treat anxiety and depression. Now, this should be great news because we know that synthetic medications and psychotropic drugs often have many negative side effects, as I mentioned earlier. In 2012, a study published in Complementary Therapies and Clinical Practice evaluated 28 women at high risk for postpartum depression and found that by diffusing lavender in their home, they had a significant reduction of postnatal depression and reduced anxiety disorder after a four-week treatment plan of lavender aromatherapy. In fact, here is the exact sentence taken from the PubMed.gov website. The pilot study indicates positive findings with minimal risk for the use of aromatherapy as a complementary therapy in both anxiety and depression scales with the postpartum woman. Yet another study showed that lavender improves mood on people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, which can result in depression. Lavender had amazing results, showing signs of enhanced moods. The results also revealed that the lavender oil, when used daily, helped decrease depression by 32.7% and dramatically decreased sleep disturbances, moodiness, and overall health status in 47% of the people suffering from PTSD. Lavender is also the go-to oil for anxiety, as it has a calming, relaxing effect. It is considered a nervous system restorative and helps with inner peace, helps with sleep, restlessness, irritability, panic attacks, nervous stomach, and general nervous tension. There have been a number of clinical trials involving the inhalation of lavender essential oil that indicates a reduction in stress and anxiety. Further research demonstrates lavender's ability to lower anxiety in patients undergoing coronary artery bypass surgery and in people visiting the dentist. In fact, the dental study states, the reception area in hospitals always has been a highly anxious place for patients. With our controlled experimental study, we have tested the hypothesis that essential oils reduce anxiety levels in patients awaiting dental procedures at dental offices. Patients, while waiting for dental procedures, were stimulated with the ambient odor of lavender and then compared with the control group. We have found that patients exposed to lavender essential oil fragrance had lower level of anxiety and confirmed the previous notion of sedative properties of natural essential oils and extended its use in dental settings. They say, by our study, lavender is an effective means of reducing current or state anxiety levels and not as an anxiety treatment. And I think that's important. It's not a treatment, but it can reduce the levels of anxiety. This provides evidence favoring the use of lavender scent in dental settings at a low cost, simple intervention for alleviating dental patient anxiety. So think of that. Next time you have a dental appointment, bring a small bottle of lavender oil with you to the dentist to ease your nerves and lower your anxiety level. And you can get your own bottle for only $7.99 at our website, tinydropseo.com. The E stands for essential, the O stands for oils. tinydropseo.com. So now here's a quick and easy recipe that I use all of the time, and it's simple. Just mix 3 drops of pure lavender oil and 1 teaspoon of coconut or almond oil, all again, which can be found at my new website, tinydropseo.com. So that's 3 drops of lavender oil to 1 teaspoon of coconut or almond oil. Blend them in the palm of your hand and then rub onto your neck for some natural anxiety relief. You can also rub this on the bottoms of your feet, your wrists, or the rim of your ears. Actually, it's perfect for any time or just before bed. When the oils touch the skin, they begin to penetrate rapidly. Since they are so potent, it is important to dilute and blend with a carrier oil, such as I mentioned, sweet almond or coconut oil. And I said it before, but I'll say it again. You could find sweet almond oil, coconut oil, and lavender essential oil, and more at the essential oils link on the website. You can actually go to speakupandstayalive.com. We have a special link there that says essential oils, or go to the Tiny Drops website, and that is called tinydropseo.com. Just type in www.tinydropseo.com. So I just thought I'd share with you a non-invasive, non-toxic, truly all-natural remedy we can all find with essential oils. And I have many more health issues listed on the website with the exact essential oil that can bring relief. And if you're new to essential oils, let me suggest lavender as an excellent all-round choice for issues such as headaches to muscle aches. It's effective as a sleep aid. Just rub a tiny drop or two on your head, your neck, the bottom of your feet prior to bedtime. You can use it on your face along with some almond or coconut oil to treat acne, wrinkles, inflammation. And you can find out so much more at the website tinydropseo.com. Well, having said all that, I think it's time that we head into the interview that aired on Sandra Reich's radio show, Straight Talk with Sandra Reich, where she will be interviewing me. So let's head into that.
Welcome to Straight Talk with Sandra Reich. Are you trying to master the game of life without success? There are secrets and strategies to living your best life. We'll share some of them with you on today's show. Take advantage of this series to become an expert at relationships. All relationships. It's time to live the life that you deserve to live. Now, here's your host, Sandra Reich.
Hi, welcome to Straight Talk with Sandra Reich. I'm calming myself down because I'm all excited to speak with my incredible guest today. And I'm excited for so many different reasons. I'm a big fan of hers. But before I get into that, I want to talk about on top, you know, it's not, you know, being a fan of someone is not necessarily the reason I bring someone on the radio. Straight Talk with Sandra Reish is about living your best life. And I think it's so important what this woman does. It's just incredible. She actually advocates for patient safety. And let's just take a moment and think about that. So, I mean, I'm sure Pat's going to tell us a lot about it, but just imagine that you fell sick today. And or you broke your leg, or you know, you didn't know what was wrong with you, and you walk into a hospital or to your doctor's office, and no one's there advocating for you. Can you imagine all the things that could go wrong? Now, I know for sure a lot of things can go wrong, and it's not quite a hospital situation, but personal story for me is my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer in the 90s, a long time ago. Unfortunately, she's not with us anymore. And when she got breast cancer often metastasizes to the bones. It's very typical of breast cancer. And she started to feel pain in her bones, so she went to the doctor, and I happened to be with her that day. And I'm no patient advocate, nor did I know anything about this topic. And she said to the doctor, doctor, my bones are hurting. I'm worried it's spread to my bones. And the doctor said, come on, you're in your 60s. Of course your bones are hurting. That's normal at your age. Please go home, relax, don't worry about it. So she was not scanned. Now, by the time 6 months later they scanned her, the cancer was all over her bones and certainly contributed very much for the cancer spreading and ultimately killing her. So of course she went back to the doctor and she said, doctor, I told you that I felt my bones were hurting. Why did you not scan me? And the doctor said, and I'm very curious what my guest is going to say about this. The doctor said, if you felt your bones were of concern, you should have insisted and argued and advocated for yourself. So we were flabbergasted. So when I met Pat, and the way I met Pat is that Pat runs a radio station, actually a network. And Straight Talk is syndicated on her radio network, which is called Speak Up and Talk Radio. But I found out that she does patient advocate hospital services. And I thought to myself, can you imagine the story I just told if we would have had an advocate? I mean, I'm talking about my mom here, guys. What if someone was in our corner telling us the possibilities? So a bit somber beginning for Straight Talk today, but I, as you know, I try to look at things in a positive way. And in a positive way, I think we're very, very lucky that we're going to find out what we can do. So before we get into it, let me definitely introduce my very, very special guest. Pat Rulo is the author of the book Speak Up and Stay Alive. Think about that. Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. And she speaks nationally on the subject of patient safety. She's a hostess and a producer of her own national radio show, and it's an amazing radio show, and she's so good at it. I'm so shy today. She stresses the need to have an advocate at all times and shares the dangers, what they are, why, and how they happen, and how to survive them. Prior to becoming a voice for patient safety, Pat was known as a speaker and coach in the insurance industry. Ooh, it just keeps getting more and more interesting. She's recognized through Consulting Psychologist Press as a certified administrator and interpreter of the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. She is the author of numerous business magazine articles as well as books and is the founder of the charity, The Support Project, where handmade pillowcases are personally delivered to homeless veteran shelters, women's and children's domestic abuse shelters, and also cage comforters to animal rescue homes. I told you she's an amazing woman. She is also the host of Speak Up and Stay Alive radio show, as well as network director, that's the correct title, of Speak Up Talk Radio, where, by the way, I'm very honored to have my show, Straight Talk with Sandra Reish, also airs. Welcome to the show, Pat. I'm so excited.
Thank you very much.
Pat, tell me first and foremost, how did you fall into this patient advocacy business? We've had such great conversations, but I don't actually know the answer to that question.
Well, my story is a little similar to it, to yours, in the fact that my mom in 2008 had fallen at work and crushed her shoulder to the point that it couldn't be repaired. It had to be replaced. And so she went in for a total reverse shoulder replacement. And during the surgery and post-op, was having a heart attack that then went undiagnosed for over 9 hours.
Wow. I'm diagnosed. How is that even possible?
The next day, a doctor who I did not know found me in the hallway, actually pulled me by the arm, pulled me in a small conference room, handed me a manila envelope, and he said to me, "This stinks, and you need to do something about it."
Oh, wow.
And when I opened it up, there were four EKG rhythm strips taken while she was in recovery that all said acute myocardial infarction in progress, that said heart attack in progress, and yet it was missed.
What was your emotional reaction to that, right, when that happened? Because I'd be a combination of furious and terrified.
That's exactly what it was. And I knew right at that moment that there was no way I was going to leave this lady there by herself. So basically, I quit working and I spent the next 4 months by her side almost around the clock in the hospital just to make sure that more untoward things did not happen. And they surely did. It was a nightmare. It was a miracle that she lived. So once we finally got her out, about a year later, I felt like I was almost having post-traumatic stress symptoms because of this. And one day I thought, I'm either going to go crazy with this, or what were we supposed to learn from this? What am I supposed to be doing with this horrible information? And I had written books in the insurance industry and I was a speaker then. And I thought, you know what? I got to get this out of me. And therefore, the book was kind of the child that was born of that experience. And it just led to speaking events and radio, not anything I ever planned to do.
You know, it's wonderful example of how you turned your lemons into lemonade, something I'm really big on. So it is out sometimes in these really rough moments that we get these epiphanies and we know what we need to do. And I think you do it so well. And I listen to your voice and you command respect. So that's important when you're a patient advocate, because you want people to take you seriously.
Absolutely. And you do walk a fine line with that when you're in the hospital advocating for someone, where you don't want to be too assertive and out there.
Right.
And you don't want to be too shy. So it's a very delicate, and it's all about relationships, which we can talk about later.
I want to go through all of it, and I'm very touched by your story. I want to know about your mom too as well. So first of all, we talked about your mom. How did this all play out? What was the ending of the story?
The end of the story is they gave her 2 years to live, and she lived 8 years. She just passed away 4 weeks ago.
I'm yeah. Sorry to hear that, Pat. I didn't know that.
Yes. It's been a lot of food for my show, let me put it that way, because we've been in and out of hospitals, and every time we go, I'm thinking, oh, got to talk about that on the show. So there was plenty of food for conversation.
Well, but the fact of the matter is that by you advocating for her, she was able to live all those years.
Yes.
Because she needed somebody to advocate.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I guess after that happened with your mom, you saw there was definitely people would be in need of someone who's an advocate. So how does someone become an advocate? And, you know, are you like, do people call you up? And if I was sick and going into the hospital, can I hire you? Is that how it works?
I'm not working that way yet, where I hire out. What I'm doing is basically giving that information to folks so that they can become empowered, and that their family members or friends or whoever can become empowered. My suggestion is that anybody can be an advocate. You can advocate for yourself, unless, of course, you're sick in the hospital. Then you really need another set of eyes and ears and a mouth, somebody that's going to be there, pay attention, and to be able to speak up. You don't have to have medical training. You just need to care, pay attention, and be willing to ask questions and get answers.
I love the way you say that. It's just right to the point. So here's the thing, is the opposite side is, what kind of things happen during a hospital stay that we may not be aware of? Like, why do we need an advocate?
And most people don't think that there are many things that can come their way, but there are so many, such as misdiagnosis, medication errors, hospital acquired infections is a big one. Things like malnutrition, you wouldn't think about malnutrition in a hospital. That's a pretty serious situation. And the list just goes on and on and on. And that's why I decided to highlight 17 of them in the book, things that folks just wouldn't think about.
Well, that's so important. And I've heard a lot about this malnutrition, for example, like people are having, like, they're in the hospital for heart conditions and they're being given food that actually induces heart conditions. It's the oddest thing ever. And we're in 2016. How could this still be going on, Pat?
question, you would think, well, with all of the technology, but maybe sometimes technology could be part of the problem as well. So many people and so many of these poor nurses are just engrossed and embedded in their computer, and they're just constantly typing away. Nobody's really looking at the patient. Nobody's paying attention. No one has time to ask questions. Just the way healthcare is set up today, the doctor has to see so many people, has maybe 10 minutes to see you. There's not enough time. There's not enough staff. They're overworked. They're underpaid. It's just a giant mess, really, and I don't see that it's getting any better with all of the technological gizmos that we have. It almost seems like it's getting worse.
I think that you make a very good point about also the fact that nobody's really watching. And I think it's not for malintent. I was away this week speaking to nurses out west in Canada. Amazing group of people if they're listening. Thank you all so much for being so amazing. And I was very taken. I mean, they're so overworked. They've got so much what's called compassion fatigue, which is part of what I was talking on. It's eventually the only way to survive working in a hospital is to really almost shut down. And you're forced to not care. So it's not that the nurses and doctors don't care. It's just they're also falling apart. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I saw that on your website today, and I'd never seen compassion fatigue. I'd never heard those two words put together. And boy, did that ring a bell for me. Because not only as a caretaker, say, of me taking care of my mom, I was thinking about that whole dual caretaker situation where you might have a nurse who's caring for people during the day and then might be a daughter that's caring for a parent when they go home. So, I mean, that is a crazy huge weight and a responsibility on a person. So I agree with you, that whole compassion fatigue is an issue. I don't know how you get past that. I mean, that's part of the job, and you really can't not pay attention to each and every patient. And you, just that little extra time that you take makes such a difference.
Well, what we talked about out west, which is so important, is that people who are in the caretaking profession, of which you are and I am and the nurses are and the doctors are, need to fill their own pockets first and take some time for themselves, because it's impossible otherwise. And, you know, you talked about, you said you even felt like you had a post-traumatic stress response after your mom. That's also something that we observe in people in these situations, secondary trauma. Right. It's a real psychological term. I mean, there's no question that when you're dealing with someone who's going through trauma, you get some of the trauma in your body.
Absolutely.
So how do you protect yourself from that when you're advocating, or when you're teaching people to advocate? What would you say? How do I protect myself when a condescending doctor is talking to me and going, well, you know, this is the way it is. You don't like it. That's the way it is. What do I do?
And I think that's almost something that needs to be practiced, where maybe you could even practice out in the real world. Something as simple as asking a doctor or a nurse to wash their hands. When I give speaking events and I ask folks, how many of you would feel comfortable asking your doctor to wash his or her hands? And they're like, not me.
Yeah.
And so I always suggest, okay, next time you go to the grocery store and you're having something sliced at the deli, ask the girl behind or guy behind the counter, can you please change your gloves? Would you mind washing your hands? Or at the bakery or whatever, and get that feeling of empowerment maybe somewhere else where it's less stressful, because you really do need to practice being able to say those words. But then if you really understand what the ramifications are if a doctor or nurse does not wash their hands, and the fact that you can have a very real opportunity to get a secondary infection, if you really understood that, you wouldn't have any fear to say, hey, you're going to wash your hands before you touch me.
So important. Those secondary infections can kill you, absolutely kill you. They're what a lot of people die of in hospitals.
Well, absolutely. My mom came home with one at the IV site. And so then that means that you've got to have another course of antibiotics. And so you've got this heavy-duty course of antibiotics that can cause C. diff, and you can eventually die of something that has nothing to do with the original diagnosis.
That's so scary. And, you know, it's so funny because I consider myself very assertive. I mean, I'm straight talk with Sandra Reish, after all. And I do think that I would have, like, a little bit of a hard time saying, can you wash your hands, even though I know that's what I should do. I think that's almost a female thing, is I'd be worried about hurting that person's feelings. How silly is that? It's silly.
Well, you could almost phrase it like, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm a germ freak, or mom and I used to play off on each other where I would say, she's a little bit nutty about washing hands. Would you mind doing that? And I'd blame her, or she would blame me. So whatever you need to do to dance around that. Yeah, it needs to be done. I even came up with a business card that's, I call the icebreaker card, that says, I'm concerned about healthcare acquired infections. Please wash your hands before touching me. So sometimes they walk into the room and they get ready to shake hands, put out that hand or maybe a gloved hand, and then I just hand them that card and, oh, okay. So I don't have to say anything. I don't have to worry about my tone. And they head right to the sink to wash their hands.
Has anyone ever reacted in a very negative way? Like, you know, you must be kidding. I wash my hands all the time.
And many do say that. I washed it right before I walked into the room. And then you did touch the doorknob, right? So, you know, I figure if they're going to be arrogant with me, then that allows me then to at least stand up and speak up for myself.
I guess I'm speaking for the people who are listening to us, and I'm sure they would want to know this. Would you not have a fear at that moment that, because I would, that if I say that, and I'm right, I'm entitled, but now the doctor is going to give me shoddy treatment. Do you ever have that fear?
I had that fear, but I have had this conversation with so many doctors and so many patient safety experts through my radio show, and everybody has pretty much guaranteed me that they're not going to give you any lower level of care because of that. Actually, I think secretly they might think, okay, we got a wise one here. And when they come in the room in the future, then they know, you know, I'm watching and I know what's going on. So I think it might work in your favor, even though you think, okay, they're not going to like me for it. You're not there to win any friends. You're there to get the job done.
I think that's such an important point. You look like you want to say something.
I was just going to say that always takes me back to the whole idea of relationships and how you deal with people and how you make friends with them. And again, if we have time, we can talk about that because I think that's crucial.
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, you and I vibe well together because that's where I was going exactly, because it's funny, you know, we want to be nice and we want to be polite and we want to be good girls and say the right thing. And actually, people treat us a lot better when we have expectations of each other. I mean, the research on that in marriage is unequivocal. And you're right. I mean, we could have a lovely relationship, but if I felt you were disrespecting me, speaking up for myself should not end the relationship. It should be sort of like, okay, like it's not anything goes in this relationship and vice versa. So I quite agree with you.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think just little things by saying, can you please help me? Or can you please help me and my mom? Just to ask someone, can you help? I think just hearing it that way, nobody wants to not help. And then when they do help you, then you say, thank you so much. Thank you for helping me and my mom. I thanked everybody, the housekeepers, the aides, anybody that walked in. And you say it as if, I mean, it's coming from your heart. Thank you for helping me. Not many people get thanked. And they remember that. The next time they come in the room, you're good buddies.
It's so true. And that brings up, you know, that's why I love talking to you. It brings up the point of, I often say to my manager, to my children, a thank you goes a long way.
It
goes a long way. And I don't know why we don't think to say that. And I love the way I think this is relevant even to the next question, which is to highlight a few actions a patient or a family member can do to make sure that they stay safe in the hospital. I would think that even being pleasant and polite is one of those actions.
Absolutely. And to find out about that other person, this reminds me of a story last when my mom was in the hospital. The second day she was there, I walked in the morning and she points to this young man who was the aide. And she said, he doesn't like me. We've had a little confrontation today. And I'm like, oh, mom, what do you mean he doesn't like you? So the next time he came in, I asked him his name and I asked him, he said he had another job. I'm like, where do you work? And we talked about that. And then we talked about his dog. And we talked about things that mattered to him. The next day he came in and the first thing he goes, where's your daughter? I love her. And little by little, you know, we broke that barrier down to the point that about the third day he was calling mom Buttercup. What do you need, Buttercup? Let me come in and, you know, do what I can for you. So I really think it's just caring about the other person, realizing that they're not just there to, you know, bring you the bedpan. They're a person too. So why not find out who they are, what they're all about, and build that little mini relationship with them? It really pays off.
And I think that's important because it is a two-way street. We often hear in Canada, you hear people complaining about medical care all the time. And, you know, we have the Medicare system, which, you know, has its perks. We don't pay when we go to the doctor, but it's not always perfect. And I sometimes wonder if we sort of, as a society, have become over-entitled that, yeah, the person doing the bedpan is just there for you.
Exactly.
And I don't like that. It doesn't sit well with me. So I love that you're saying it's a two-way relationship.
Absolutely. I would even ask them, how many people are you looking after today? And they'll say 30. I'm like, okay. So in other words, I'm not going to see you every time I ring that call bell. And so now they know that I understand that they're busy, and nobody, I can guarantee you, nobody else has had that conversation with them.
You know, if we're not going to treat people who are taking care of us and our loved ones well, why do we have the expectation that they're going to treat us well? It seems to me that's extremely unfair.
Exactly. So that's a job of the advocate, because oftentimes the patient can get cranky, they're not feeling well. So that's one of the roles of the advocate, is to be that barrier or that liaison between the staff and the patient, and to make sure things go smoothly. Now, of course, if you have a concern and you bring that concern up and it doesn't get tended to, well, then I would do my posturing, you know, and stand outside the door, you know, make sure the job got done. But that wasn't my go-to reaction.
Wonderful. Okay. When we're trying to be nice and not say these things to doctors, nurses, whatever, it could cost us our life. So it's not a joke. I think the other part that Robert was very taken by, Robert's here with us, my manager at the clinic, is that we have to advocate for ourselves, but we also have to be respectful of the people who are taking care of us. That is such a hard job. Would you want that job? I wonder how many people would want to be the bedpan person. Right, Pat?
Nobody respects them. You know, they're the lowest paid, they're the lowest trained, they're the lowest respected. And when you reach out to them and welcome them as a human being and say, thank you for doing that, believe me, you stand out.
So back to patient advocacy, here's my question is, what are some of the things I can do or someone can do if I have to go into the hospital? So years ago, I had to do a surgery. I didn't know any of this. I just went in and I couldn't have even imagined that I could die of infectious diseases that I could get from a doctor not washing their hands. What should I do if next week, God forbid, I have to go into the hospital? What do I need to do?
Well, a lot of things to prepare. One of the things that you might want to consider doing ahead of time is getting your advance directives in place. Now, I know that sounds really scary, but you know, what happens to you if you get into a situation where you can't speak for yourself, and who's going to make those medical decisions for you? So I think it's very important to have a healthcare power of attorney in place and pick that person very wisely, not because it's your oldest daughter or the, you know, the one that's closest. It's got to be the person that you feel is really understands what it is that you want and will actually grant your wishes, which then leads me to that whole conversation that nobody has any kind of a conversation about end of life. What would you want to have happen to you? So even though you might be going in and you're, you know, 30 years old, you never know what can happen. So you do want to have those conversations. Some simple things, though, to stay safe when you're in the hospital. I discovered something that I never knew about, and it's called MARS, M-A-R-S. Mm. When my mom was in the hospital the first time, she all of a sudden, walked in one day and she said, look, there's a baby over there. Oh, the nurses were singing all night. And thinking, what's going on, mom? And a nurse walked in and said, your mom's showing signs of dementia. Like, this isn't adding up. I don't know what's going on. Finally, I thought, what kind of medications is she taking? And that's when I discovered MARS. It's called the Medication Administration Record Sheet. It is the piece of paper that's computer generated every morning that the nurses then know what medications to give you throughout the day. And now I didn't know that I could ask for that. So it's something you can ask for every day. Get a copy of your medication list so that you know what you're taking and that you understand why you're taking. And if it's something that gets missed, then you can say, hey, you know what? I didn't get the 3.125 milligrams of carvedilol, instead of saying, did I miss that tiny yellow pill today? I mean, we need to be empowered to know what it is we're putting in our mouth. You wouldn't pick something up off the road and pop it in. Neither should we trust that what we're given, you know, is ours. Could be the person next door, down the hall. So it's very important to know what your medications are and maybe even go a step further, as I did, and say no medications get added or subtracted unless I've been made aware of it. And that's something that an advocate can do as well.
It's amazing. You know, we've been socialized. I know my mom told me this after that terrible experience that, you know, my parents are European and they grew up that doctors were God.
Yes.
And I think to a certain extent, we still see a white coat and we feel safe. And we're socialized to trust doctors. And I think that's not all bad, but I think the problem is that they're humans and they can make errors. And I think that's true in any field, like in my field too. I often tell my patients, this is what I think about this, but I have absolutely no objection. I think it might be a good idea to get a second opinion.
Absolutely. I want to read something to you really quickly.
Sure.
When you talked about medication errors. I have this in my book. It says, Preventing Medical Medication Errors, a report by the Institute of Medicine, advises Congress on health matters and discloses, on average, a hospital patient is subject to at least one medication error per day.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, this is a fact. This is not something that could possibly happen. It's something that does happen. So we need to be smart and know what it is that we're taking and why we're taking it, and ask the question, is there something else that I could be taking that might have less side effects? And that's another question. What are the side effects? Often no one tells you, take this, goodbye. And you don't even know what could happen unless you read that insert with the font of -3 that, you know, you can't even read.
I think that this has been one of the major things on Straight Talk, is that to inform people so that they can ask questions and make choices. And I know sometimes I do shows that some people love, and sometimes I do shows that people don't love. They don't want to hear it. And that's, I'm okay with that. And I think you probably are too. The point is, I really believe, and I think you seem to also, is to have the information and then decide what you want to do with it. So someone could hear you and say, well, I trust the doctors and I don't care about the side effects. Okay. But I do care about the side effects. I want to know. And you have a right as a patient to know those things. So is this highlighted in your book, Speak Up and Stay Alive?
It is.
So where do our listeners get your book?
At our website at speakupandstayalive.com. We're keeping it kind of close to the vest, either at my live speaking events or at our website, speakupandstayalive.com.
So it's such important stuff. And I mean, I need this book. I need to have it. And everybody needs to have it, because no matter how much you think you know, there are things that someone like yourself, who's a specialist, can teach you. So a healthcare power of attorney, I knew about a living will. I knew that that's important. So to decide how far you want people to go in measures to keep you alive. I'm wondering, with the healthcare power of attorney, I'm sure people will be curious, should it be a family member? Does it matter? Are family members too emotionally involved for this?
And that's always an interesting question. And that person can change as relationships change. Again, it has to be someone that you feel that you really trust. Probably somebody who might be somewhat financially secure, that might not say, okay, let's pull the plug on mom because there's a life insurance policy that I could use. I mean, and that's a crazy thing to think about, but it's a very real fact and it happens all the time. So it has to be somebody who is going to do the research for you, understands what you want, loves you, cares about you, and wants the best for you. That's, you know, that's a lot to ask. And so sure, typically it is a family member, but oftentimes, you know, it could be someone that's next door that you know that you trust. It's a difficult call.
It's a difficult call, and it's probably a call you want to make in advance, right?
Well, that's why they call them advanced directives. One of the reasons, because you should get it all taken care of in advance when you're in a sound and safe mind where you could make that rational decision. You don't want to be doing that at the last minute thinking, oh my gosh, or maybe not even being of sound mind and trying to figure that out.
Absolutely. Yep. So, Straight Talk listeners, you definitely want to read this book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, and get this information. It certainly is waking me up to the fact that, you know, this is how we live our lives, is we sort of take things for granted, and we take things for granted that everything will go smoothly. And actually advocating in life and being passionate about things is such an important quality. You know, I'll ask people to think about it on the break, is what your convictions are and what are you passionate about? And do you live your convictions? Because this goes right across the board, Pat. I'm just getting very inspired by your passion. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important for people to think about that. And I was very taken by the passion. So yes, I do think you're an empowered woman, because there's an incredible kindness to you. But I also feel that you command respect. You mean business, and you are going to be, this is my feeling about you, and this is what I try to teach my patients to do. I mean, Robert was talking on the break about you don't even realize all the things that can go wrong, except anxiety patients realize all the things that go wrong, and then they become fully anxious, and they won't go near a hospital or go to a doctor, and that's not the answer either. We definitely have to address that. Right, Pat?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't really think about that in the terms of what you work with every day. Yes.
Well, they won't go to the doctor because they're listening to the show saying, you see, I could die. I'm not going to go to the doctor. And that is not the answer. So the answer is to make some good choices and to be a person of conviction. And if something doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right. On that note, I'm curious, what is, bottom line, biggest and most important safety tip that you will give our listeners today?
I think we've already said it before, be able to speak up and just pull that out of yourself. It's your life. You're never going to see these people again. You're really not there to be buddy buddies with someone. You're there to get a job done, and you've got to fight for yourself. And so with respect and with kindness, you need to be able to speak up in order to stay alive.
Speak up and stay alive, Pat.
Got it.
Unbelievable. So the answer, just Pat, so they hear it from you and not just from me. So the answer is not to avoid doctors and hospitals.
Obviously not. No, we need doctors and hospitals. And I do want to maybe give a disclaimer here. I am not pointing fingers out. I am not saying bad hospitals, bad doctors. What I'm doing and what I've been doing is pointing the finger back at myself and back at us to say, okay, shame on us if we don't go in fully prepared and empowered to take care of ourselves. It's not bad people. We need to just make sure that our voice is heard, and maybe even ask your healthcare provider, I want a partnership with you. I want to work together with you so that our health, so that my healthcare is a partnership. It's not just a one-way conversation.
I'm glad you said that disclaimer, because we have such a debt of gratitude to doctors, nurses, all the people who work
for
at
sure.
Hospitals. And if anyone's listening and thinks that they're, you know, this is blaming the doctors and nurses,
no.
I think that's really unfair. I think that certainly here doctors and nurses are overloaded. As I said, I've just come back from a talk, and the nurses I met were the most extraordinary people. They're exhausted. They're just exhausted, and they're trying their best with a system that's so overworked. So I think that's why advocating is so important.
That's right. I just wrote a letter to the whole nursing staff on 2 West, where my mom passed away. And I said that very same thing. And I thanked them and tried to remind them how important their work was and is. And just that little look and a smile and an extra conversation that they have with someone does not go unnoticed. And so that was my hope for them. That nursing staff, I don't know how they do what they do. I could have hugged them, you know, constantly just for the work that they did with my mom, really.
I couldn't agree more. They're changing the world, as is what you're doing is changing the world. And that's what it's all about. So that does bring me up to a question that I'm a bit curious about. Is right before we went live today, I found out that you're now involved in essential oils. How on earth does a patient advocate, a network director of a radio program, end up in essential oils? Talk to me.
Again, my mom, she's been just a godsend to me here, in a bad way for her. But, you know, we tried to come up with solutions ourselves. She had this total reverse shoulder replacement. The pins started coming out. She obviously outlived the length that they thought that she would. And she had great pain in her arm and shoulder. And I was looking for natural alternatives, non-invasive ways maybe to help those muscles in that arm to find some relief. And we did a lot of different alternative things. And I thought, let me try essential oils. And we did a blend of lavender and peppermint and would rub that on her shoulder and on her arm. And it gave her relief. I mean, it didn't solve the problem, but it did give a very non-invasive, pleasant way to feel some relief. And, you know, we got to massage it in her arm. She got my attention because I was massaging her. It was just a beautiful experience. And so I thought, there's something more to this. And so I've spent the last few years studying essential oils and thought, let me offer this in conjunction with what I do, because I think it's a natural progression, talking about staying healthy and healing and what can we look to do in ways that would not add an extra layer of harm. So rather than taking an aspirin for a headache and upsetting our stomach and our liver and our kidneys, maybe just rub some essential peppermint oil on your temples or the back of your neck and your head, and it works for me. And so I thought, let me put that out there so that others can take advantage of it as well.
Well, just to add on to that, because I am a huge believer, is the science is there. There's no question for people listening. The science is there. Lavender, there's all sorts of research on lavender. I just came back from a conference where some top doctors were talking about putting a drop of lavender right under your nostrils when you're having, again, that headache feeling. There are a lot of things that essential oils can do. So you are now offering essential oils to people through a website. Can you tell us which website that is?
Yes, it's called Tiny Drops. Tiny Drops EO, and the E stands for essential, the O stands for oil, tinydropseo.com.
Okay. So if people go on tinydropseo.com, they will find every possible essential oil related to sickness, or is it just every possible essential oil, period?
I decided not to offer every essential oil because there's so many and it's confusing. I narrowed it down to my top eight, some of the biggies like peppermint, lavender, eucalyptus, tea tree, frankincense, sweet orange, lemongrass. And on that site, they will find a link that says the science. And I have the science behind it so that folks know that this is not woohoo or voodoo or anything crazy, that over 70 hospitals in the United States are using essential oils, Johns Hopkins, the Cleveland Clinic. Wow. A lot of your top hospitals are using them for surgical patients, for relaxation, for nurses, just what we were talking about, that compassion fatigue. Yeah. Exactly. So there's a lot of wonderful applications that do no harm.
Yeah. And do no harm is always nice. Do no harm is nice. The problem, we always have to come back to other shows that we've talked about this, is that do no harm and essential oils and a lot of things that work so well, unfortunately, are not as profitable as medication is. And I just want to put it out there for people listening. Some people are going to agree, some people are not. But always look at, when you're being told to do something, if somebody's making money on it. If somebody's making money on it, you have to be a little bit cautious.
Well, think about every pill and every medication initially was derived from a plant. And so now you've got the big pharmaceutical companies cannot patent a plant. So there's no money to be made there. So let's distill and then add all the synthetics and all of the, you know, the garbage and the toxins to it. Yeah, you're exactly right. Follow the money is a conversation I have all the time. That usually leads you into the direction you need to go.
You know, as I suspected, the time is going way too fast. I want to make sure people know how to find you. Pat, okay. Tell us all the ways we can find you.
All right. Easy ways, the website, speakupandstayalive.com, speakupandstayalive.com. They can email me at pat@speakupandstayalive.com. So those two ways would probably be the quickest and easiest ways to find me and get the information that you need.
Pat, it's been fascinating to talk to you. It always is. You're just my kind of girl, passionate, convicted, and trying to change the world. So I really want to thank you for coming on Straight Talk.
My pleasure. I so respect you and the work that you do. And it's just been a pleasure to be here and talk with your audience as well. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you so much, Pat. If you're interested in retreats, coaching, or other media that was mentioned on the show or previous shows, check out www.helpforanxietydepression.com for the books or media, any of those things. Check out also our Facebook and feel free to leave questions or comments for me or any of my guests. And remember, you can listen to this show or any other previous shows on my host site, my website, on the podcast app of your iPhone or iTunes under Straight Talk with SandraReach.com. So remember, keep your eyes on the stars. This is Straight Talk with Sandra Reach, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Straight Talk with Sandra Reach. We hope you've enjoyed today's show, and we'll tune in again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Now, go live your best life.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
When you're admitted to the hospital, it's important to know your status. Are you admitted as an inpatient or are you considered under observation? This bit of often secret information just might make a big difference to your wallet. Let's find out more from my friends at the Welsh Home in Rocky River. Listen as I spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner. Lauren, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good today, and I have a big question for you. How is your hospital admittance status tied to potential benefits and out-of-pocket costs?
When you're in the hospital, there are two different admission categories. You can either be inpatient or you can be an observation. People don't realize that there is a difference between inpatient and observation. People think if they've stayed there overnight, they're there for an extended amount of time, that they are automatically inpatient. We have seen people who have stayed in the observation status for 14 days, 15 days, and never were actually admitted to the hospital. The reason that you need to know the difference between these two things is your insurance benefit pays for your stay completely different when it comes to inpatient versus observation. When you are an inpatient, your insurance benefit covers much, much more of the stay than when you were in observation. The other reason that you need to know the difference between inpatient and observation is if you need to go to a facility after your hospital stay, that can play a huge role in how much your insurance will pay for that stay after the hospital.
All right, folks, you just heard a snippet about that. Be safe. Ask about your status each day you're in the hospital. And the folks at the Welsh Home know about these things and they can help you. And you don't have to be Welsh to ask for their help. Call them today to arrange for a tour or simply to ask questions. 440-331-0420. That's 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com. Well, there you have it, another show with lots for you to think about. And if you'd like even more, invite me to speak to your group, your club, association, church, senior or women's group, or even your assisted living facility or hospital. Everyone can use a brush up on patient safety, because guess what? We're all going to spend some time in a hospital, either as the patient or friend or family member of a patient. So rather be smart early than be hurt and smart too late. Call me to discuss the few details. 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And this week, remember to visit the essential oil website, tinydropseo.com. Tinydropseo, the EO stands for essential oils. Tinydropseo.com for many health issues and solutions. So give it a try. It can't hurt, and it beats the expense and potential side effects from pain pills. Visit tinydropseo.com for more tips and tricks. And with that, we are so out of time. But be sure to come back next week for more timely healthcare and hospital safety tools. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Did you know that over 70 hospitals nationwide are using essential oils to fight germs, improve mood, and reduce stress? I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Now you too can have access to these amazing natural health options. For example, you can use lavender to reduce stress, sweet orange to improve your mood, peppermint to improve focus and energy and alleviate those headaches. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com.